then now I'm just starting to like get over this cough, so I'm glad that you can be with me now. So if I cough, I don't know, that's real, that's authentic, right? Yeah. Okay, here we go. Hey everybody, and welcome to the Not Boring Business Podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Redman, founder of Air5. This is not Suits and Handshakes business. This is Not Boring Business. Let's go. Yep. Okay, to get into the show, we've got a very, very, very nice and beautiful lady, Natalie Frank. Is it Frank or Frankie?
Yeah, it's Frank. You got it. You got it. I know, okay, everyone perfect. Always wonders if it's Frankie or Frank, but no, Frank is perfect.
So Frank with an E on the end is what divides it between a first name and a last name. That's what kind of how I'm thinking about it now. Like,
yeah, I guess we're just a little fancy. You know, my ancestors, they must have yeah. just felt the need to be a little fancy. No, I think it's German, and in German it's pronounced Franca, but obviously not German, so I go by Frank.
It's Frank.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So, I want to, once we get into a little bit about like who you are and you can go into that, I want to talk a little bit about what made you stick out to me. So, literally you have no idea how often I told this story and what it meant because it was so different. And I, found you on Instagram and I reached out cause I was biz deving. Always trying to grow Not Boring Business, the product side of things, helping entrepreneurs. Loved your hustle. DM'd you, and amongst some other people that I enjoyed their hustle. And I got back from you a DM'd video,
yep.
right? Like, yeah. It was like, hey, Jeremy, thank you so much, da 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 da, like a message. And I literally shit myself. Like, I've never gotten that from anyone ever, right? Like, even if you do get a response, and that's when I started following you. I told employees to follow you. I was like, now I'm obsessed. You have made me not only a fan, but like an obsessed fan. I was on your website. I was looking
right
at
now.
Products you had. Like, it was everything. I literally, my fiance, wife, oh man, there we go again. My wife, I was in Rome looking at your website, telling my wife about you. Like, this is Natalie. She's the one who sent me that video. Remember about, look at, this is great. Yeah, she's a photographer. And I go, I just can't, what made you do that video? Like, what is that about you? Or like, what makes you you? That you deliver that video to a message.
So here's the truth. I believe in doing things that are non-scalable when it matters. I think a lot of times we're looking constantly for efficiency, and I work at a startup. So I work at a place where efficiency is often the difference between success and failure, right? But I really believe that doing the work that matters, doing the non-scalable things, pay off. And so this can look a lot of different, you know, look like a lot of different things. But for me, you know, on Instagram stories, Instagram DMs, that is the only real way I feel like I get to connect with my community anymore, with how busy I am and just how many things I have going on. So when my friend told me, hey, you know, you can send like videos, you can send boomerangs, you can send, you know, photos back to people, I just realized this had to become a part of how I interact on the platform. So I don't get the chance to do it all the time, obviously. I mean, right now I've got, I think, over 80 in my other folder, let alone the ones that are just in my actual inbox. But I do make an effort whenever I can to just respond back with a video. And look, it's actually faster. It's faster to respond back with a video than it is even to, you know, sometimes type out a really long caption.
Sure. Right. I don't know. I guess, right? Like, you got to set up the camera. I mean, maybe if it's like we were talking about the authentic piece, right? Like, if I just sit there and I look fine, right? If I don't have to worry about how I look and is my hair nice? Do I have to do this video like two or three times?
No, but that's
like normal people do.
You know? But that's the problem right now, honestly, with our world and with marketing in general, is that it's too polished and it's too perfect and it's too curated and everything fits in its component part. And, you know, everything is sort of segmented, and you go to an Instagram feed and it's perfection on perfection on perfection. And so I honestly believe any chance that we get to be real with our audience, be a human with our audience, not worry so much about what we look like in that moment or having the perfect lighting or getting the perfect, you know, sort of speech down, and just be you, just straight up talk to people like you would if we were sitting at a boardroom together, we were hanging out over like a real meeting, right? And just, hey, here's what I'm thinking, or like, hey, I'd love to do this, but I can't, or hey, like, I don't know, there's something about that authenticity that I think is missing. Because the authenticity we often refer to still has a place in this realm of curation and PR, and like nothing's really authentic anymore if you have that ability to spend 6 hours crafting it. Because how honest is it truly if it's crafted, if it's you know, refined in a way that's, you know, gone through different people's perspectives and feedback loops and all of that, right? No, I think just getting in front of people, putting your face out there, talking, even if you mess up, even if you don't look perfect, even if you say the wrong thing, but nonetheless, we don't mind when people make mistakes. We mind when they cover it up, and we mind when they pretend to be somebody that they're not.
Oh my gosh. I love that. Right. So I have worked out this. I'm going to be 100% myself. Cause my, when I started this podcast, my fiance, my wife, she's going to murder me. She's going to murder me.
You're
going
to get it though.
This.
It's early on. By the time you get to fiance, you're generally married.
Yeah.
So this is normal.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Except this is on record. Right? Like this is on, that's what's funny about it. So like she was like, you can tell in some of your episodes, or at least I can tell that you're agreeing with them and you don't want to, like, I can tell that you're doing that. And I go, oh shit. Right? Like, so this is the first one where I'm recalibrating and I'm just going to literally be myself. You're great that I'm agreeing. I love what you're saying, and hopefully Holly agrees. But I kind of take things so far. I have a terrible, terrible, terrible potty mouth. I try to earn the explicit sticker on the podcast. And like, what to you? I guess, like, piggybacking off of what you were saying, what of the real you is like enough to put out there? Like, what is it too far to, because I run a board, I've lost a $30,000 sale like 2 months ago because I said, and I quote, I want to start a motherfucking revolution, like that. And there was a bunch of Southern gents in the room, and like, they didn't take kindly to my potty mouth. So like, but I've won thousands of dollars in sales as well, being myself and having that same mentality of, I'm just going to go in this, be myself, not be nervous, not be overplayed. What is going too far for you?
Oh, okay. So this is a really good question, and I want to tackle two things. One, I decided very early on that people were either going to judge me for being what I thought they wanted me to be, or they were going to judge me for being myself. And I'd rather be judged and criticized for being who I really am, because ultimately I'm going to attract the right people to my platform, right? The right people to my website, to my blog, to my community. And so this shift happened probably about a year and a half, 2 years ago, where I had this realization. I had been trying to appeal to everybody, and therefore I was truly connecting with no one. And, you know, it's a very famous marketing phrase. And so I think that really, really took hold. And that's one thing. But on the flip side, the question of, you know, what is too far? You know, it's hard. I am very, very transparent with my audience, especially on stories. Instagram stories has been my way of sharing not just the, you know, sort of expected moments, things that I'm doing at work, things that I'm doing career-wise or even personally, but also to share the things that people never get to see. For instance, I'm trying to think of an exact example. Oh, you know, going clubbing in Tel Aviv. I shared myself yeah. clubbing in Tel Aviv, right? And, you know, until right. 4 a.m. I'm literally out to 4 a.m. And I, again, within reason, I'm not posting anything that, you know, is obscene, but I'm sharing right. the truth. I'm sharing the reality. I never get a chance to have fun, ever. And I am in an amazing place. I want to go out and I want to dance. And so, you know, I'll share something like that coupled with, you know, sharing strategy on how we're tackling the new algorithm on Instagram. And it all meshes together. And I've noticed my audience, look, they know that when I pick up the camera, I'm going to speak to them as if we are truly friends. I'm going to tell them what I'm working on, what I'm nervous about, what I'm struggling with, or even, you know, basically connect with them in any way that I can to build that relationship. Because to me, that's the whole point of social media. It's funny, you know, that you even mention products in my website, because I barely sell anything. Like,
I know
am someone that in a world where everyone is, but selling I fucking dug. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, right? I get that feedback a lot. Cause in a world where everyone is trying to sell something, everybody mm-hmm. is, I don't have a course to sell you. I have like a couple random products in a shop that I put up there because I stopped shooting weddings full time and I didn't want my contracts and all of my templates, my whole workflow to go to waste. So I literally just
right.
productized it and stuck it up there. Have not marketed it at all. And that's because what I'm doing here is I'm building something, you know, 20 years down the line. I'm not trying to make a quick buck off of anybody. I mm-hmm. want to truly make an impact. And I feel like right now in this season, community is the place where I'm doing that. And maybe in the future, that's something different. Maybe it's a book. Maybe it is a course one day. But right now, it's not. And so I share, you know, myself online. I don't often curse publicly online, but that's more because I have a lot of younger followers, like much younger followers, and I just want to be mindful of that. But otherwise, I mean, you know, I do my best to be myself. I really do. I hope
so. You talk about that's great. And like I said, it is something where I saw your, because I wanted to find more about you, like, because I was so interested at that point, like, oh man, who is Natalie, right? So like, I started to go in, and I obviously was, because I was interested, I based around your social media, and I liked your hustle. It was something where I go, if I want to take a photography, I'm going to this girl, right? I'm going to this lady. I'm going to this woman for like everything that I want to know. So
thank you.
You're welcome. So around that, I've struggled with, I think my personal brand, or what has now blossomed into Not Boring Business, where we sell a product, a blog, and all this other stuff. I've kind of blended it all into one social media account, just like Not Boring Jeremy. Right. Mm-hmm. And cause I believe it is me, right? What do you sell more yourself online or on Instagram, or is it the business? Do you need two accounts? How do you segment it?
Okay, so this is a really good question. For my personal brand and business, it's one account. It's just at Natalie Frank. For the businesses that I work for, because now I am both, you know, in some ways, obviously an entrepreneur, but also I've sold one of my companies. So I still run that company now for another company. I lead community.
You sold it?
Honeybook. Yeah. I don't know if you know that. So we,
no.
Yeah, we built Rising Tide back in 2015, and we ultimately merged with Honeybook. At this point, maybe 2 years ago, it might be at this point.
Congratulations. Yeah. That's you. Awesome. That's a good step. You. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've done a lot of different things. I think that for me, though, on the personal brand side, I mean, I have one account and I direct content there. But we also, though, have these other accounts that we leverage for specific, you know, audiences. And there are pros and cons to either way. I mean, honestly, you know, with my personal account, I'm able to share me unfiltered for the most part and just what I'm dealing with. But then on the Rising Tide side, I'm sharing more education, sharing more knowledge, sharing access to things like how to handle GDPR as a small business owner, how to tackle taxes, what to do about SEO, like, you know, and pure content-driven communications with our community. So the types of conversations we're having are very different on the two accounts.
Yeah.
And the audiences are again, there's a lot of crossover, but they are different. There are people that follow me that don't follow Rising Tide, people that follow Rising Tide that don't follow me. Which one?
I'm gonna put you on the spot. Which one do you care most about?
Oh gosh, I think it's hard because I think that Rising Tide will always sort of be the thing I sacrifice for. I mean, that is my baby. When you build a business, it becomes like a part of you. But my personal brand will outlive any business or initiative, right? Mm-hmm. So it's hard. If you're talking about which one do I care about most right in this moment, I'd say Rising Tide. If you were to ask me which one do I care about most long term, it's the personal brand. Because I know that I'll go on to create other things one day, like Rising Tide or bigger than Rising Tide or different, you know, for different people. So maybe smaller, but more intentional. But I know that all of that will stem from a personal brand that's strong.
Okay, so you're building this personal brand now. You've also had the Rising Tide thing. I don't think we just got into a conversation. And now 16 minutes later, I'm enthralled more in your story. But to back up just a little tiny tad. Yeah. So you started, this is my grasp, you started as just a photographer, right? Your own little freelance photographer business. Start from there and how you exited the company.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was photographing weddings full time up and down the East Coast throughout college. And when I came to be a senior at Penn, I decided instead of going to get a full time job, I was going to take this business and run with it. And so fast forward 2 years out of college, I've built this business to above, you know, the six-figure threshold. I'm shooting sort of at capacity, to be honest, and had kind of maxed out my potential. And like in this space, in this very, very niche space that I was working in. And I found that as I was more successful, I became more lonely and overwhelmed and sort of riddled with like this weight, this heavy, heavy weight that just felt like it was stripping me of my joy and my creativity. And I didn't have anyone to talk to about it. You know, the people who would understand, other photographers, were my competition. So long story short, I started connecting more and more with other photographers at the time and just really championing this mindset of community over competition. And what started as a conversation and then a hashtag on Instagram, community over competition, evolved into what is today the Rising Tide Society. And so it happened very simply. We got together over coffee on Instagram. We shared it. And people around the country saw, you know, creatives all gathering in Annapolis and calling it Tuesdays Together. They wanted something similar for their hometown. And so in recognizing that there was a need for localized meetups amongst creatives, we formed sort of an organizational structure around it. We basically built a business around it without monetization for the vast majority of the pre-HoneyBook months. And we, you know, cultivated it. We expanded. We started with just a handful of chapters. And within 3 months, we had over 100 chapters meeting, you know, all around the Eastern Seaboard and then extending to the West Coast as well. And it just grew. I mean, the product we were offering was community. It was free for people to join. It still is. It's free to attend a Rising Tide meetup. They happen every month on the second Tuesday of the month in 400 cities now, which is great.
Holy crap. And how do you monetize that then if it's all free?
Well, so now it's funny. Now I actually teach community builders different avenues for monetization. You know, everything from obviously in the same route that a blogger would go, you have the ability for brand partnerships and sponsorships. You have affiliate revenue income streams. You have the ability to actually get like initiatives covered by companies. So there are a lot of companies that will give you sort of like a grant to run with an initiative. You can also sell a product as a community. You can sell education. There are a ton of ways. Or you can literally be acquired by a larger company. And that's our case. That's what happened with Rising
Tide. Once you have the attention, right?
Yeah. I mean, really, you know, if you were to take it from just a business perspective, I mean, the business gains so much from supporting and investing in a community. It's hard for businesses to grow communities. And I think that in our case, we were really fortunate that our dream, our desire, our core values for this community, what we wanted to see the industry do and change into, HoneyBook shared the same vision. They had been attacking it in a different perspective. They've been building technology and we had been building community. But nonetheless, we both realized that if creative entrepreneurs and freelancers can thrive, if they can build businesses that actually, you know, sustain them, that help them to feed their families, that give them additional income to invest in the economy, that world that we both wanted, right? If that came into fruition, then a company like Honeybook is going to be incredibly successful because there are a ton of freelancers who need help with workflow, right? And yep. Our mission of having creatives live this more fulfilling, more balanced and supported life in every way would become a much better reality. We'd be much closer to it. And so for us, we were really, really fortunate. It was a sort of like a core value alignment more than any traditional acquisition or merger of any kind. But, you know, it ended up enabling me to go full time and get paid a salary to do what I love. So I'm grateful for that.
So in the initial stages in Annapolis, is that where you're from?
Yes. Yeah. Annapolis, Maryland.
Okay. So started there. Did it just grow word of mouth? How did you get discovery around the events?
Yeah, completely organically. Like, as I mentioned, we weren't making any money. We weren't charging for meetups and we weren't going to put any money into this. This was our passion project. It was really never meant to be as big as it is today. But we leveraged Instagram. Instagram was our main vehicle, I believe, you know, especially in those first 3 months. We didn't even make a Facebook group until over 2 months after our launch. So a lot of people think of Rising Tide and they think of the 75,000 person Facebook group. But, you know, it's funny because that's not even how we started. And we added it later for an Instagram challenge and then continued to run it. But yeah, I would say social media. That was really our main avenue.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So and this just goes to show, like, everyone in the audience, like the length at which you go to like accomplish your goals. You set your mind to it, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of the community, a lot of the listeners are freelancers, side hustlers, solopreneurs, people that like I try or guests try to inspire. And one of the things that I think about always is the lengths at which I go to accomplish my goals. So like I will do literally anything on one time during my wedding in Italy. I was like, pre-wedding, I like took like a business phone call, like, cause I was like, I'm not doing much, right? She's getting ready. She's looking very beautiful. And cause a sale needed to be made. I was like gone for 2 weeks. This was just, it's in my blood. I need to do this. Or at least I feel like I need to do this. So like, can you give an example of a time where like I had to go to huge lengths to accomplish something that I wanted to do?
Oh, I mean, at every stage of my journey as an entrepreneur, there have been moments like that. I mean, if you rewind all the way to college, I took a train from Philadelphia to Baltimore nearly every weekend in the spring and the fall just to shoot weddings to make enough money to cover tuition. So
I love that.
That is like an extreme. I mean, I would leave on Friday. I'd come back before my 8 or 9 a.m. class on Mondays and the early train. I mean, sitting outside the Amtrak station, you know, in Baltimore at dark. I mean, truly at dark. Week after week after week when my friends are posting, you know, on Facebook and Instagram, the parties they went to and the frat events they attended. And that is sort of the level of dedication that I've taken at every step of this journey, every step of the way. I think, you know, there's a lot of conversation right now about, you know, like F the hustle and a lot of hatred towards this idea of the hustle. Mm-hmm. And I've really been torn. Like, I'm sharing something with you I haven't shared, you know, at all. And that is that I've been really torn about this, you know, sort of like war against the hustle, because if I'm being honest, I believe the reason I have been successful is because I outworked everyone else. That is the truth, you know?
Yes.
My husband has said that to me. Like, I'm being honest. My husband said that to me the other day. He said, you know, we were talking about what he wanted to accomplish, and he has some killer dreams he's going to crush in the next couple years. But when we were sitting down to do timeline, my idea of what was accomplishable in a certain given period of time was nowhere near what he had envisioned, because my work ethic is bizarre. It's almost unhealthy. And I'm being frank, like, it's unhealthy. I have an issue with working too hard. But nonetheless, if we're being, you know, truthful, I think the reason I've been successful is because I worked harder than everybody else in whatever it was that I was doing. I would stay up later. I would find ways to, like, just literally, and not just harder, I mean smarter plus harder, right? There's like this nice little intersection between, you know, finding those hacks. Like, for example, HoneyBook, what we build is a platform to make people streamline everything in their business so they can use that superpower doing the things that are actually going to bring them wealth, right? And bring them joy, and taking that time and reallocating it. And that's the same thing that I applied across the board. So that's the truth. I mean, what lengths did I go to? If you name a thing that someone has had to do for the business, there's a good chance. We don't have cable. We don't even pay for cable. Like, we've made decisions. We lived with his parents for a while so we wouldn't have a mortgage. I mean, we've done anything we had to do in order to enable me to, you know, reinvest in my business, put my mind where it needed to be. And I also have a partner that has, you know, my husband. He's been an incredible encourager. And
is he more stable? Is he more stable than you are?
Oh, we are yin and yang. Like, I am sort of fiery and passionate, and I care immensely. I get very emotional, and people throw that word around a lot with women as like a negative thing. I believe my empathy, my like deep empathy and compassion for other people is the fuel that actually sets me apart. So I lean into that. Mm-hmm. He is very, you know, steady. Has an amazing job, has been very successful in tech marketing for a family company. But he's like 9 to 5, clock in, clock out, very level-headed, and I am the complete opposite, you know, huge risks entrepreneur.
Dude, and that I think is me, and the more I go, the more I learn about, this is funny, this exercise in entrepreneurship that I've been doing the last few years. I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur since I was like 7, 8. I was selling soda at fairs. Like, I would get kicked out because I didn't have a license or a permit to sell these things, right? And I was just all about the hustle always. Never was a school person. And I just only knew how to like sell things or sell myself. And if I had a good idea, I could exploit it or exploit these next opportunities, whatever it was. It doesn't matter. And I think it's the one variable that everyone can like change, right? Like, I'm not working hard enough. If I go to bed, I ask myself this question every day, and it's half the reason why I barely sleep, which is bad. But like, did I make progress today? Right? Did I make enough progress today that set me up for tomorrow or next week? Or did I do nothing? Like, then you don't deserve the right to go to sleep, right? And I kind of tell myself that, healthy or unhealthy to you?
I think that it really depends on whether you look at this as a lifelong, like, for example, is this lifelong, you will always be this way, or is this season by season by season? Because for me, I look at it like it's a season. This is my hustle season. I've got to get something off the ground. I've got to build the momentum and the structure and then get a team beneath me to actually take it over. And then once I get to, like, I'm almost at that place right now with Rising Tide where it runs. I mean, I have an amazing team. They're doing better than I could have even done at this point for it. And, you know, they're better than me. I say that. I'm like, hire people better than you. Bring them under your wings and kind of guide them. But then at a certain point, I want a little break to breathe and enjoy the hard work that I've done, and then I'm going to get restless again, and then it's going to happen again, but it's in seasons. So I think for me, it's unhealthy if it's forever. It can be, you know, tolerable for seasons as long as you also have partners that understand the sacrifices and what that's going to mean, as long as you're honest with yourself about what you're giving up, because it's not all private jets and, you know, like we see on Instagram and entrepreneurs kind of parade around. No, it's you know, tears because you screwed up and you failed in a certain capacity, or it is, you know, just kind of wondering where that next paycheck is going to come from in certain seasons. If you're trying to raise money, it's trying to understand if your pitch was on point. Did you connect with the investors the right way? Whatever that is, I think that it has to sort of be a true and honest conversation that you have with the people in your life and the people, aka yourself, you know, how this is going to shape your future. One thing I want to jump on, though, is you made a comment. You said,
jump
you know,
on
hard
it.
Work is like that one thing you can control. Hard work is that thing that, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, what you were given or what you have, what your lot in life is. Like, hard work is something that you can kind of own entirely. And
yeah,
my mom always used to say something very similar to me growing up. You know, she was an athlete all throughout high school and college, and she used lacrosse and basketball to get into the Ivy League. And she played sports, you know, in the Ivy League. And fast forwarding to growing up, and, you know, people would always kind of comment on that. And on the East Coast, it's a kind of a weird thing. People become very, I don't know, impressed by where you went to school. And my mom would never miss an opportunity to remind my sister and I as young kids, you know, and this is literally what my mom would say. She would go, "I was never the smartest person in my class. I was always one of the dumbest ones in the room. I got in there because I was an athlete." But one thing I realized very early on was that it didn't matter how smart these other kids were, and it didn't matter how much of a better education they had than I did before showing up at class. When I walked through the door, if I worked harder than everybody else, I was going to make it.
You're right.
And that meant she had to study more, and that meant she had to work harder, and that meant that between practices, she was, you know, making flashcards and outlines, and she would go over with us how many hours she spent studying. And my little sister is like this now. She's in medical school. She does the same thing. And that idea of, look, there are going to be people that are smarter than you, that have more money to invest in their business earlier than you, that have been given certain opportunities that you haven't been given. But the truth is, if you're willing to work incredibly hard and you have the grit and resilience of not giving up easily, there are few things that you cannot accomplish. Like, the world is really just sitting there for you to take hold of. But so many people just look at their dreams and don't ever take an actual actionable step forward in making them happen.
Yeah, you're completely right. But to cake on top of that, it's like, dude, I come in contact with so many people that talk about wanting to be a millionaire or wanting a Tesla. Right. And they, I'm like, do you know what that looks like? Right. Do you know what making $1 million a year looks like? And you're sitting here, you're 30 years old, whatever they are, 35 years old. I love it that you keep inspiring yourself, but you're not taking, like you said, the actionable steps to make that so. And it's not just one actionable step. I think a lot of people take that first step. I think a lot of people get demotivated over time when that first step or that second step or that 10th or 20th step doesn't work. And it's kind of like my perpetual fear that I will knock on 1,000 doors and give up, knowing that my opportunity is at 1,001. Right? Mm-hmm. What keeps you motivated to keep going?
Truly, it is my legacy. I believe very, very strongly that in 100 years, no one will remember my name. I mean, it would be great if someone remembered my name, but I don't remember my great grandparents, like what they liked, what they were about, what they talked about on the weekends. I have no idea who they were as people. But, you know, when I look at the impact they've had on me, that means something. And so for me, the truth is, what keeps me going and keeps me pushing forward is this vision that I really want to see come to life, which is, you know, a world a little bit better than how I found it in very specific places where I can actually make an impact. Because obviously none of us can just wave a magic wand and change the world in the very fairy tale picturesque way that it's often painted to us. But we all have very unique abilities and gifts. And, you know, for me, I know that one of them is empowering women. I'm very passionate about empowering women. I believe that, you know, men and women just have very unique ways in which they tackle problems. I see that now even in the workplace. And there is so much need for this collaborative environment where we are coming together to kind of change the way that we tackle everything from tech to, you know, sort of policy and government. So that's something I'm passionate about. So I do that through female entrepreneurship, right? That's one avenue. I care a lot about, you know, mental health in small business ownership, mental health in, you know, this online culture that we live in. And so I use my platforms to tackle that. And I realize that the larger my platform grows, the larger my business grows, the more people I can impact and the more lives I can impact. And for me, that's that like fire, right? When I'm winning and I'm seeing things grow, it's because I recognize that whenever we want to do something crazy and amazing next, we have more people to walk alongside us to do it. And we've done things like, you know, raised money. We're building a school in Laos this year. Actually, right now, they're building the school simply because we had a community large enough that when everyone contributed $1, $2, $5, $10, we were able to raise over $50,000 in one day that we donated to build this school. And that's an exact tactical example of what happens when you are successful and then you leverage that platform to help other people, right? To truly impact the world.
Absolutely. And you make that impact daily. And I mean, I see it. I see it on your Instagram. You're one of the only people that when I get to the story, I've got to watch like almost everyone. Like, I get bored with a lot of people. And I'm telling you, I genuinely think, and like we talked about earlier, there's a bunch of bullshit on Instagram. But you seem to walk this fine, delicate line of being completely genuine and actually like rosy and positive. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's one thing when you're sitting and you're watching someone's story and you go, this is full of bullshit. This person is going to give me a how they're depressed story in 2 months. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
This is false positivity. This is positivity based around nothing. Like, and they're going to like, it's going to be like a completely different story. We're going to be asking for everything in 2 months. I know this. I've never gotten that sense. How do you stay that genuine and that positive? Is it a perspective that you keep? Like,
Yeah, you nailed it. When you said people are positive for, you know, the sake of it or just for the sake of positivity, they just are doing it. There's nothing behind it. It's kind of fake positivity. The exact thing that came to my mind was, yeah, but for me, it's positivity because of perspective. Mm. And I was diagnosed with a brain tumor when I was 21 years old. And
Wow. It's,
you know, a huge part of my story over the last 6 months, especially. But, you know, again, it was this moment where I've been working my tail off to build a business. I just got engaged. We got engaged very young because we were high school sweethearts. So we'd been together at that point for 6 years, almost 7 years. And I get this diagnosis and it changed everything for me. I recognized that my life was going to come to an end at some point and that I, you know, either had to stop making excuses, stop being the victim, stop letting, you know, everything be, oh, someone else's fault or this isn't going to happen for me or negative in some way. And instead, I had to own my own destiny and really step into, you know, what I believe I was created to do. I don't think it's an accident that I am really bad at certain things and really, really good at other things. And I need to lean into those things that I'm good at in order to help other people and kind of bring about this change in the world. And so that for me was a catalyst because, you know, it's really funny. I obviously work in community. I help people in every way that I can. But the, you know, level of complaint and struggle that people deal with varies dramatically. I have people that complain about, you know, email subject lines they don't like and ways in which we frame Instagram captions, right, on the community front.
Sure.
And on the flip side, I have people that struggle to get out of bed because they have a chronic illness but are still getting up and doing the very best they can to build a business for themselves. And they recognize that their life, you know, is up against some really tough odds. And I see both in the exact same day. And the difference in terms of positivity, you know, is that for some of us, we're focusing on these things that to us matter in the moment, right? But they don't matter. In 5 years, whether or not you got a lot of likes on an Instagram post is not going to be relevant. But whether or not you got up every day and were grateful for the fact that you could still walk, that you could breathe, that your arms worked, I mean, that's the kind of thing, that's the kind of mindset that I think I was thrust into because of that diagnosis. And then you fast forward to my surgery, which happened in November. I mean, I knew going into that surgery.
Just this past November?
6 months ago.
Oh, like, wow.
Exactly. You know, I knew going into that surgery that my life could look very different on the other side. And it's hilarious, all of the things that I stress about, right, and just in general, that suddenly I had to let go of completely as I'm getting ready to go into this surgery where I'm, you know, going to come out slightly different. And for a long period of time after that surgery, I had a really, you know, strenuous recovery process. And so I really think that if this had not happened to me, I would likely be in Annapolis, probably, you know, complaining about the Instagram algorithm and frustrated that, you know, my shipment didn't arrive on time from Amazon, and living in this life that is very focused on small frustrations. Whereas now I think I'm grateful, and this is being honest, like, I am grateful that I can speak to you right now and that I comprehend cognitively what you're saying back to me. I'm grateful that we have medication to treat water diabetes, because I developed it after my surgery, and without, you know, first world hydration, which has also now become an issue I care a lot about.
Oh my gosh.
And medication, I would dehydrate and probably die, right? So there are these outcomes that I think have just really awakened me to the point where I'm like, I used to think and worry about these things. Now I'm insatiably thirsty every minute of every day. And that just changes you. It just does. That's the truth. It just changes you. And you have to accept positivity as a choice and truly find places where it exists in your life. Because when you put that in front of you, when you are positive and you're looking forward at, you know, the obstacles ahead, but you're seeing them as opportunities, and you're really striving to say, I'm grateful. And these are the amazing things I get to do today. And you mean it, like in your core, you truly mean it. It manifests itself in your life in a powerful way. And the reverse is the exact same. When you're negative,
you spiral into
that negativity.
Yeah, that is so true. It's all about the perspective. What is water diabetes?
Yeah, so essentially the part of the brain that they had to operate in produces a hormone called vasopressin, which the body releases, everyone's body releases it just to tell your kidneys, like, hey, you need water to survive. Hang on to that water so that your cells and your body can function. Mm. And that part of my brain was damaged in surgery. And so I do still produce a little bit of that hormone, just enough to kind of keep me going. Like, I can skip medication when I really need to for whatever reason. But
jeez, dude, you are amazing. You are an inspiration, no, my friend.
I'm adaptable. Oh. I'm resilient and I adapt. I don't know if I'm amazing, but I will not let anything stop me, including, a brain tumor and whatever came at the other side of that.
Water diabetes. I can't imagine. Yeah. I cannot imagine having those things or going through those things, which makes me dislike to the highest power all the people that just talk and don't have these issues. Like... Man, I don't know.
It's just different. It's like, different perspectives. Like, I don't get mad. I don't get mad that, you know, I think we all have different things that we struggle with. There's not a single person I've ever met who hasn't endured something hard. I mean, when you really dig, there's something that I think all of us have either overcome or are facing or unfortunately is on the horizon, right? And
absolutely.
I think that my biggest thing is that it's this melding of different perspectives, like the people who have gone through something similar to me, or someone who's never been through that, or someone who's going through, you know, infertility, or someone who's going through cancer, or parents that have, you know, have passed or are struggling with alcoholism or drug addiction. I mean, you name it, there's a lot of pain in the world. I think that those unique perspectives, once we have come through our own hardship or are in the process of really looking retrospectively, it's that type of melding of perspectives that I think really brings about a lot of wisdom for the collective, right? So I'm one small piece of it, but I've loved learning from people who have been through it, others who haven't, and it's always interesting just to see how we view things so differently.
Well, yeah, I'm telling you this, I'm a fan. We definitely have to be respectful of her time, but I'm telling you this right now, on this software, I can see your work ethic that I have, so we use this software. I sent Natalie a link. Natalie, you have already uploaded a profile picture to this thing. Like, that's insane. I have used this forever, and I'm looking at a red icon with glasses on that just doesn't show my picture. You are truly a breath of fresh air, Natalie Frank. I appreciate you being on the podcast. Thank you so much. Where can our listeners find you?
The best place is Instagram. Feel free to send me a direct message. I mean, that's how we got connected. So absolutely. I would love to connect with you there. It's just at Natalie Frank. And as Jeremy mentioned earlier, it has an E at the end. So Frank with an E. You should find me on there. And you can find Rising Tide Society and Honeybook 2 on all social channels.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Natalie.
Thank you so much for having me.